Welcome to a podcast of Beyond the Book, a presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center. Copyright Clearance Center is the world's largest provider of copyright compliance solutions through a wide range of innovative licensing services and comprehensive educational programs for authors, publishers, and their audiences in academia, business, and research institutions. For more information about Beyond the Book and Copyright Clearance Center, please go to www.beyondthebook.com. Publicize This Book is an insider's look at how to get ink when your book finally comes off the presses. Beyond the Book's Christopher Keneally hosts book publicists Lissa Warren and Tracy Bisson to hear their secrets for success, including how to make a reviewer's job easier.
Welcome to all of you. This is a very special Beyond the Book program presented by Copyright Clearance Center, and we've got people from literally across the country joining us, so I'll say good morning and good afternoon, and welcome on board our two panelists, Lissa Warren and Tracy Bisson. Good afternoon to you both.
Thank you.
We've called this program Publicize This Book, and really this is something that I believe many authors now realize that the last word on their writing isn't between the covers of their books. It's to be broadcast on cable or the airwaves, carried by the internet, and appearing in newsprint. It's all about publicity today and ensuring that your work gets the greatest possible audience and the most attention that you can find for it, and that really is a kind of helps you to earn a reward for all the hard work of the writing. We're going to do separate interviews with both Lissa first and then Tracy, who come to us from two very different perspectives, but I believe with complementary experiences about publicizing books and authors. And as the operator explained, we will be asking you for your questions, and we hope you will participate. Take some good notes, and I hope you enjoy the program. And first, I want to introduce Lissa Warren. Again, good afternoon, Lissa.
Hi.
Lissa is currently Senior Director of Publicity at DeCapo Press, which is a member of the Perseus Books Group. And she has worked in the publicity department of several prestigious Boston publishing houses, including David R. Godin, Houghton Mifflin, and Perseus Publishing itself. She's an experienced promoter of both fiction and nonfiction, with particular expertise in business and biography, health and history, poetry and parenting, sports and science and music. Some of the bestsellers that she's worked on include The Clue Train Manifesto, Greenspan, The Man Behind the Money, Smart Mobs, and Faster Than the Speed of Light, and most recently a book that was on the cover of the New York Times Book Review section, Though the Heavens May Fall. Ms. Warren holds a Bachelor of Science in English Education from Miami University and an MFA in Creative Writing from Bennington College. So, in fact, she's a publicist but an author herself. Her poetry has appeared in a number of really prestigious poetry journals, including Oxford Magazine, Black Warrior Review, and Verse, and she's been quoted in many inside publications for the industry, including Publishers Weekly, PR Week, Book Publishing Report, and so forth. So quite a lovely background, and a terrific book that you wrote yourself, which we can talk about in just a bit, Lissa, but again, welcome. And let me start with a question that I think is really sounds obvious when you ask it, but isn't talked about quite as much as it should be, and that is that the first word in press relations is the press. And so I think we need to know something about the press and their behavior and what that means to book publicity itself. Can you tell us what it is that you understand about the press and how they work today?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I think it's important for any author to always keep in mind that the media, both print and broadcast media, broadcast meaning radio and television, that they are bombarded by pitches from publicists. And even more so, they are absolutely, literally bombarded by books flying off the shelves at them in their various offices. So I think you always need to keep in mind as an author that you need to make their job as easy as possible, because these are busy, busy people. One way of doing that is anticipating their needs, whether it is getting them a copy of your book far enough in advance of pub date for them to really do something with it, whether it's quickly getting them the cover art that they need or your author photograph. Perhaps it's providing them with a list of interview questions so that rather than having to read your book and create their own questions, they're able to just use what you've given them, and that can really give you a leg up ahead of any other book authors who are out there who might be having similar quote-unquote products to give to them. So I think you need to always think about what can I do to make this person's life easier, and you really need to have a customer service mentality toward dealing with the media.
Right. I think that's a really good point, that customer service, you referred to some of the really basic things, but it's being responsive, it's answering your email, it's checking your voicemail. I know I was a journalist myself for a number of years, and there's nothing worse than working on deadline and really hoping to get a quote from somebody who you think would be terrific for the story and leaving a message and never hearing back.
Absolutely, and you have to be willing to be available at a moment's notice. Whether it's for, a print deadline for a newspaper, or whether it is heading over to your local NPR, National Public Radio affiliate, to do a show that's halfway across the country when they only call you a half hour before, you have to be very versatile, and you have to always be someone that they can count on. If you say you're going to be there for an interview, you need to be.
And I think that helps you to build a reputation with the press, with the individual reporter himself or herself, because they'll come back to you if they know that you've been responsive. But just in general, it will build a kind of a snowball effect. And I think it's interesting that, on the one hand, they are very, very, very busy people, but because they are my people, as I said, I was a freelancer for many years, I can say this. Deep down inside of almost every journalist is somebody who's a bit lazy. And
well, I'm glad you said it, not
okay.
me.
Right, we wouldn't want you to say that. And by that I mean, and you've just touched on it, but talk a bit more about having material prepared, these questions and talking points and so forth.
Sure, you bet. One thing I always do with my authors is I send them about 10 questions that I've pulled from the material in their book. And sometimes, rather than have me do it, they're even happy to write 10 questions by themselves. And then I ask them to answer those questions in maybe 5 to 7 sentences each, and we make a little Q&A, question and answer, that goes in the press kit. And the media is able to read that Q&A and get a very good feel for what the author can discuss, and also a bit of their voice and what they'd be like, to have on the radio, for example. And sometimes when my authors can't take the time to answer those 10 or 15 questions, I at least provide those questions to the media so that they don't have to create them. And then I also ask my authors to pull together a page or two of talking points, just some of the key ideas that are in their book. Often it takes the form of sort of a top 10 list, top 10 signs that your child's daycare center may be inadequate, or top 10 ways that companies can really spur corporate growth. And those go right in the press kit and are used by the media when they are formulating their questions and when they're evaluating whether they want to have anything to do with the author, whether they want to do some sort of item about the book.
Well, right, and it shows a kind of an organization and a preparedness that is probably going to be help to raise the credibility level for this particular author and their work. And it strikes me too that when you're talking about broadcast reporters, whether it's radio or TV, unless they're doing an extended interview, they are going to be looking for a soundbite.
Absolutely.
I know that's what I was looking for in television. Can you define that as you've experienced it? What makes for a good soundbite?
I think catchphrases are always good to have. For example, we did a book called The Irreducible Needs of Children, and the term irreducible needs, meaning a child's basic needs, really caught on with the media. And time again, they would ask in interviews, so what are a child's irreducible needs? Define the term irreducible needs. So I think that's part of soundbiting, having those little catchphrases. And it may be something that's in the title of your book or in the subtitle of your book, or it may be something you need to pull out from a chapter heading or from the body of the chapter itself. I think you also just need to develop the ability to speak succinctly, not to ramble.
Well, you know, I found when, again, I did TV reporting that I was looking for the particular person I interviewed to tell me some kind of a story, something, as you said, pithy, but almost anecdotal that the viewer could relate to. I could get the facts in. I could get the details across in my voiceover, but it was the way that the particular subject related to the audience that I was hoping to find.
Examples and anecdotes, personal stories, they're always helpful.
Right. Is more, and you've worked in publicity for a number of publishers over a decent amount of time, is more expected of authors today when it comes to their own book publicity than ever?
I think more is expected because more books are being published and publishers are sort of throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing what sticks when it comes to books. I can tell you very candidly that when we are evaluating a book for acquisition, in other words, before we've actually signed it and agreed to publish it, one of the things that we look at is the author's publicity ideas and media contacts. And I, as the publicity director at DiCapo, actually sit on the editorial board to evaluate that potential.
Are you expecting to see, I mean, you meaning the editorial board, expecting to see within a proposal a section on publicity ideas?
Absolutely. Yeah, I really am. I like to have an author who has an awareness that they need to gear their book so that it's not only of interest to a reader, but so that it's also of interest to the press.
That's quite interesting. You know, what has come to the fore in the last few years, of course, is the web as a way to communicate and as a channel for sales and so forth. Can you talk about some of the best ways for authors to use the web in book publicity?
Sure. I think one key thing is to target those websites that do book reviews. Salon.com, for example, is one really major one. Slate also does reviews. Things like CNN.com and MSNBC.com, they all have tremendous readerships, lots of viewers, and they all review books. So a review there can really do something for you in terms of lighting sales on fire. I think it's also very important once you get reviews to blurb them, meaning pull out the maybe 15 or 20 most laudatory phrases and words in that review and send those quotes to Amazon.com because so many people shop for books these days on Amazon. I think you also have to try to think of sites that are smaller but very much appropriate for the topic of your book, particularly if your book is nonfiction. If it's a business book, you should be going to business sites like 800 CEO Read. If it's a health book, you should be going to sites like WebMD.com. Go to them for reviews, go to them for articles, also go to them for chats because a lot of websites these days do chats. And think about the blogs that are out there, the web blogs of the world. There are a lot of them, and some of them are very good, and some of them are more, you know, what the blogger ate for breakfast.
Yeah.
But the ones that focus on books, like The Elegant Variation and Maude Newton and Beatrice and Book Slut, they get lots of viewers. And if you can get them talking about your book, it can really start buzz on the internet for your book. And if you want to know whether your book is being discussed on weblogs, just go to onfocus.com/bookwatch, and they actually have a top 10 list of books that are being blogged about.
Well, yeah, that's all great. And, you know, just because I know people will ask, we will make sure that we'll have available a list of those various URLs that you just gave out. So everybody can just write to us at beyondthebook@copyright.com, and we'll be sure to get them that list. But let me ask you about the other side of it. You're talking about going out to websites all over internet space. And authors need their own websites themselves.
That's right.
There are some essentials there and a few quick points you want to make about the author's website.
Sure. I think it's very important to have an author photo because people are trying to connect with you as a person. You need to have the cover art for your book so that when they walk by it in a bookstore, they see it and they go, oh, that's the one that was on that website. You need to have your contact information. An email address will certainly suffice, but your fans do need to have a way of getting a hold of you in the media that looks at your website. They also need to have a way of getting a hold of you, and you need to respond, and you need to check that email frequently. I think it's best if your URL is either your name or the name of your book. Don't try to be too cute with your URL. You don't want to make it hard to find. Have a section of your website where you can post reviews in their entirety, or links to reviews, or blurbs from reviews. Have a list of all of the events that you're doing, whether they're at bookstores or conferences or wherever they may be. And most importantly, update your website frequently, because you don't want someone just to go to your website once. You want them to keep coming back. And the only way they're going to come back is if you have new material for them to look at.
Right. As a friend of mine once said, by definition, a website is always under development. You can't just publish the website and leave it there. But what you've just talked about really are the assignment of the author at this stage, right? I mean, publishers expect the author to create that website, unless we're talking about, I don't know, Bill Clinton's book or something like that.
Every once in a while, we have a really big author or a house author, meaning someone who's done a lot of books with us, and in those instances, we will create a website for them. But those are the exceptions, not the rule. Generally speaking, our authors do create their own websites, and we link to them from the DeCapo Press website.
Well, you know, it sounds like you've got a lot of experience. We do want to mention your website, which is lissawarren.com, and your book, The Savvy Author's Guide to Book Publicity. What's really neat about your site, I think, is you've got something there where we can hear you talk.
That's right.
Why did you choose to put something, you know, an audio file up?
I think it's important for people to get an idea of what an author sounds like. I think that's why we very often go to bookstore events. That's why we tune into them on the radio. You want a sense of the person, and I think the human voice does that.
Let me ask you one last question, and we've got so many more, so I'm sure we can come back to you. But, you know, the press can be at times difficult. I'll put it that way, diplomatically speaking, they're difficult, but some might say abusive or use other even stronger terms. And this is something I think a lot of authors worry about. What if somebody's trying to attack me? What if they're trying to trap me or anything like that? Have you got some suggestions for handling that kind of a situation?
Well, the good news is it really doesn't happen too often. Generally, it's in the host's best interest to keep everyone's mood good, both on air and, you know, all of their listeners. You know, the O'Reillys of the world, the Howard Sterns of the world. I mean, sure, some of them can get pretty tough, and certainly there are some negative reviews that get written about books in various print outlets. The best thing you can do is keep calm. If you don't sort of, you know, let yourself get too upset about it, they are just going to look mean and nasty. So as long as you stay calm, you'll be okay. I do suggest that if it is a print review and it is really negative and nasty, that you write a letter to the editor if there are factual wrongs that you can write, if there are, you know, errors about what you say in the book. And even then, you have to keep very calm in your tone. You cannot be belligerent. You can't let them get your goat. You have to just stay even-keeled.
Right, but at the same time, stand your ground. If your book is advancing some kind of a new theory or an interpretation on recent events or something like that, you don't want to be talked out of your position.
Sure, absolutely. You know, voice your opinion and make sure that your opinion is clear and that they are not putting words in your mouth.
Well, Lissa, thanks very much, and as I say, we'll come back to you. But I now want to turn to our other panelist today, Tracy Bisson, who is the co-owner and senior publicist for Bisson Barcelona, which is a national publicity firm that specializes in campaigns and marketing strategies for authors, business professionals, and companies. She's got more than 10 years' experience in marketing and PR and has worked with individuals and companies in all stages of growth. Like Lissa, she's published work herself, articles on marketing, business planning, writing press releases, and other topics for a host of publications in the England area and otherwise. And welcome to the program, Tracy Bisson.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Let's start with something that's a particular, I don't want to say focus, but you've had some substantial experience in it, something that's increasingly the case for a number of authors, and that is self-publishing. It presents a number of publicity channels, publicity challenges for authors, and I wonder if you can talk about them. What is for you important to keep in mind if you are a self-published author?
Sure. It's a great question. Self-publishing a book can gain an author additional credibility with the media. However, it does not guarantee that an author and their book will be reviewed or that they will be interviewed. The self-publishing and print-on-demand industry has been tarnished a bit by the number of authors that have been pushing, for lack of a better word, bad work through these channels. And by bad work, I mean they have not taken the time to produce a well-written and a well-edited manuscript. So these books have found their ways to editors and book reviewers' desks over the past years and have raised red flags due to how poorly written and edited they are. So this has created a challenge for authors who have produced a good piece of work to get media coverage and reviews. So one of the things that I encourage authors to do is always to write about what you know, and this is especially true with fiction. For instance, I was talking to an author the other day who had written a fiction book that takes place on an airplane, and he has 25 years experience as a pilot, so he was definitely writing about what he knew. So because of this, this allows an author to rely on their expertise and their ability to educate others.
Right, and it gives them an opportunity to, if you will, to give an inadvertent plug to our own programs, to go beyond the book. I think that often if an author is going to be interviewed, the journalist will want to speak with them not only about the book itself, but about their own background, their own personal history.
Right.
And that's very important. Publicity, it's taken to mean so many things in this particular culture, but it comes down to people thinking that it means self-promotion. But I think that a point that's going to run through this whole program is that publicity that is only self-promotion isn't particularly going to serve you very well. And talk about that, if you would.
Well, it's not very marketable to the media as well, because the media always wants to know what's in it for them and for their audience. They don't interview an author looking to self-promote or to sell books, although that is always the author's ultimate goal. So for an author, by positioning themselves as an expert in the industry and being aware of trends, current events in the industry, will be able to educate the media and their audience. So this makes them more marketable to the media.
Right. I mean, it's good to keep in mind that, you know, the author wants to, be interviewed by a print or a broadcast person because they have a book to sell. But the journalist is looking to tell a story, to report on something. And their interest is quite different than selling books for that author. How does an author go about trying to understand their audience? Is there some specialized research you suggest? What are some things that they want to know before they think about who they're going to be approaching and how?
Well, it's really important to have a clear understanding of your target market, and there's two ways you can break that down. You can look at the demographics, which consists of age, marital status, income, things like family size, education level, and the psychographics of a market, which is things like attitudes, values, lifestyles, and opinions. So with this information, you can reach the media that reach your target market, which in turn are the people who are most likely to want to buy your book.
And I think you could tell me whether you agree, but for nonfiction, a great way to reach people, and Lissa referenced them, one place in particular is National Public Radio, and I know that I've heard from booksellers that an interview on an NPR program really does help to sell books. But in general, radio is a great way to reach on all kinds of audiences when it comes to nonfiction and public affairs. And I know from our chat before the program that you think radio is a very good way for authors to reach their audiences. And one thing in particular is that it's pretty easy for the author. You don't have to go anywhere.
Right. Yeah, there are many radio stations throughout the country that have interview programs where authors can comment on industry trends, show their expertise, and a lot of times just talk about and read from their book. Radio can easily be done from the comfort of your own home or office and is effective at reaching consumers. So when considering radio as part of your publicity plan, again, make sure that you are targeting the stations that reach your market. I suggest preparing a key city radio plan and outlining areas of the country that would reach your target market. And by that, what I mean is take a look at the country as a whole and where are strong concentrations of your market. For instance, if you are looking to reach the holistic health community, you might consider Burlington, Vermont, which has a strong holistic community up there. You know, and what other parts of the country would also satisfy your needs for reaching that target market.
Right. So if you were doing a book on, you know, snowshoeing techniques, you wouldn't want that, you wouldn't want to be interviewed in Florida necessarily.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, what's different about your work, Tracy, is that you're not inside a publishing house. You're an outside consultant, and that's a very different role. Can you talk about how that works, how authors in general may choose to hire an outside publicist and what they should expect and what kind of timelines they need to work with?
Sure. I work with authors in a lot of the same ways that a publishing house would. So, for instance, arranging media interviews, book signings, getting reviews, looking for unique and different promotional opportunities. However, I also educate authors and help them to understand the process and what choices are available to them. And this usually happens prior to their manuscript being published. So by understanding the different publishing options available and how by choosing one method over another affects their marketing and publicity of the finished product, it allows authors to have a more informed decision and feel more in control.
What about the relationship that you would have contractually as an independent publicist? In very broad strokes, how does that work? And by the way, we should say to the audience, I mean, there are a number of solo practitioners or small firms, but there are also, firms, I'm thinking of one in particular based in Boston called Newman Communications. It's not a plug or an endorsement, but just as an example. And we had someone from that particular company appear on a panel a couple of years ago. That's a fairly substantial-sized public relations firm that does a great deal of work with publishing houses and with authors itself. But tell us about you as a small business person and the kind of business relationship you might have with an author.
We work, in two ways. We've worked with the publishing house itself for the author, or we've worked directly for the author to help them reach their professional and personal goals, whatever that might be. Everybody is, very individualized. Everybody has their own set of goals. So it's working with them to help them meet their goals and, to do whatever is best to market and publicize their book.
But there's like a typical minimum period for a contract, how would the first month work or the second month work or that sort of thing?
Well, since it takes time to build a campaign and to gain that awareness with the media and the consumers, we look at about 3 to 4 months. And the first month can really be seen as developing tools that you would need, like a publicity plan or maybe putting a media kit together or getting a news release together. And then 3 months worth of implementation, putting that publicity plan to work, using that as your roadmap to accomplish your goals.
And certainly the timeline is an important one to prepare as soon as possible. If you know the book is going to be published in June and you would like to reach some monthly magazines, the deadline for the manuscripts from the magazine journalists would probably be no later than April, possibly even earlier than that. So you'd really want to be talking with the editors today for something that would be published in June. So that does... That starts to expand that timeline right now, and it's something that authors need to be aware of, even if they're just going to be doing a little bit of work of their own as far as publicity goes. Well, thank you very much, Tracy, and I think at this point I'd like to catch my breath just for a moment and bring on the questions from our audience and turn us over to Operator Vicki there if she has questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. You will be prompted to record your name. To withdraw your request, press star 2. One moment, please, for the first question. Our first question comes from Raymond Betts.
Raymond, welcome.
Thank you.
Raymond, do you have a question for one of the particular panelists, or is this an open question?
It's a particular question. I wrote a book which came out in May, and I've been trying to get publicity for it and got very little support from the publisher. This is a very large publishing house in London called Routledge, and I'm trying to wonder if it's too late at this point to pursue seeking publicity for the book, which I happen to think is rather good.
Well, this is the book.
Did you publish the book with Routledge in hardcover or in paperback?
It came out both hardcover and paperback. It's primarily, well, it's sort of a, how should I put it, a hybrid book. It was primarily done as a reader for undergraduate college, undergraduate students, yet the book itself has appealed to a wide audience.
Was it published simultaneously then in hardcover and paperback?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say that if you did it in hardcover with them in May, your best bet would probably be to wait until, you know, the paperback comes out and then really do an aggressive publicity campaign then. But since it is already out in paperback, I would say, you know, go to it and see what else you can get. I mean, the sad truth of it is that for book reviews, there is sort of a 2 to 3 month window after a book pubs, and they're either going to review it then or they're not going to review it. Now, that's not true necessarily of, you know, some targeted publications with maybe some smaller circs, but that certainly is true of sort of the larger venues, the Boston Globe book review sections and the New York Times book review sections and, you know, glossy magazines like Fast Company or Glamour, those types of magazines. So I would say your best bet is to think about small circ sort of grassroots publications. They may even be newsletters or they may even be websites that would really be keenly interested in your subject matter and go after them. I would also say that you can try to get some radio because radio is not quite as time sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important thing is for you to try to find a current events hook.
Tracy, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, some of the key things that I'm thinking of, I mean, it's hard to give specific examples without knowing more about the book and the target market. But three key things that I would suggest is to know your competition so that you can set yourself apart. And a good exercise is to go to the bookstore, go to Amazon.com and research the competition and then visit their websites to learn more about their marketing and publicity strategies. Once you know your target market, find what is the best way to reach them. Would it be email? Would it be direct mail? Is it speaking to membership organizations? Is it making sure that you can reach them through the golf club or the yacht club? Again, putting to work those that psychographic data that you would have collected. And then researching the media that reach your competition. Familiarize yourself with their format, review editorial calendars that would reach your target market. I call it trying to influence the people who influence others and kind of creating a domino effect that way.
Lisa, some thoughts yourself?
I'd say make sure to try to get into the network of regional business journals here in Boston. We have the Boston Business Journal, for example. They're often very hungry for, you know, little tidbits about books that would be of interest to their readers. And most major cities have a business radio station. Here in Boston, it was Business 1060. They are always looking for guests to talk about business titles. So between the local business journals and the local business radio stations, there's really a lot of opportunities out there. And think about small circulation, but sort of key to your audience publications. For example, there's a journal called Career Planning and Adult Development Journal. Yes, there aren't a lot of copies of it that are printed, but if your book is a workbook for that target audience, just about everybody who hears about that book is going to be interested in picking up a copy of it.
Well, and you mentioned, both of you, the local business journals, and there's a piece of it, a piece of those that I think is a great opportunity, and that is within the special sections, the focus sections, they are always hungry for op-ed columns, or I should say opinion columns, byline columns, where a particular author talks about, you know, the 5 ways to best publicize a book, for example, or, you know, the 10 things that someone should know before starting a new business, or whatever it is. And that kind of material, I think, would be welcome if it's a business workbook on a particular aspect of business, financial planning, tax law, whatever it is. You could probably even take one of those Q&As that you had talked about putting together, Lisa, and with a little bit of creativity and an afternoon of time, craft that into an opinion column.
Absolutely. Op-eds and freelance articles written by authors are two great ways to wake up a sort of sleeping book, shall we say. Another thing that you could do in a case like this is try to find some professional conferences, some business conferences at which you could be a speaker. It wouldn't necessarily have to be a keynote speaker, but just sort of, you know, one of the maybe 10 or 15 or 20 speakers that they have at a weekend long conference. And usually if you're a speaker, they'll cover your flight there and your hotel there. And you'll not get an honorarium. You'll speak for free, but you will have an opportunity to sell your book at the back of the room after your talk. And you may only sell 15 or 20 copies of the book, but people may go home and order it off Amazon.com or buy it from their local bookstore, and that will start the word spreading. It will help to create some buzz for you.
Well Tracy, I know that you agree with that. In fact, you were pretty strong about stressing the non-traditional book signing, as you call them. Lots of people want to sign books in a bookstore, and again, unless I keep using Bill Clinton, but I mean, he did sell something like 400,000 books the very first day the book was published. So he's the most recent example of the sort of big bang book author. But unless you're in that kind of category, the bookstore book signing can be a difficult event. Would you tell us more, Tracy?
Well, in my opinion, if you're not a well-known author, the chances are slim that you'll sell a lot of books by holding a book signing at, say, Barnes & Noble or Borders. And it may not be the best way to reach your target. Like you said, you're right. A business book, perhaps, that targets CEOs or business owners definitely is not going to draw a lot of those people to a traditional book signing. So you might look for opportunities to target the market through what I call non-traditional venues. So seminars, maybe a phone conference such as this, workshops, places where you can position yourself as the expert and show off your knowledge of the subject. And in, you know, other types of books, I mean, you might consider things like art galleries, military bases, membership organizations, expos and fairs, places where there's lots of people in attendance, but not necessarily a traditional bookstore setting.
Okay, thanks. Operator Vicki, do we have any questions from the audience?
Yes, we do now.
Great.
Carol Ween, you may ask your question.
Carol, good afternoon. And is your question for a particular member of the panel?
No, it isn't.
Okay, well, just let us know what you want to know.
My situation is a little bit unique in that I co-authored a book, a nonfiction, and it was published a decade ago. And it's on the local history in my area where there was a huge copper mining scandal in the 1920s when there was so much of a boom period throughout the Southwest. And the book is loaded with photos. It's a popular book. It appears that the publisher has lost interest in promoting it, but there is still quite an interest in it. And I'm wanting to get the publishing rights myself. The woman that I co-authored with, our relationship sort of went south, so that has made it difficult. I guess my question is, if I were to be able to obtain the publishing rights to my own book and be able to market it, is there a publisher out there who would even want to touch this kind of a situation?
Well, it would seem to me that if it's a book that's been out for 10 years, and certainly, you know, you've got a lot to work out there, but I would suggest you think about revisiting the book, updating the book, making it new again. I don't know, and Tracy Alyssa may agree or disagree, but I don't know that, you know, to use that old phrase, you know, old wine and new bottles is going to be the thing. But if you make some new wine, perhaps, you know, in a nice blend with the old, an updated book, new photographs, a new chapter, or chapters, that sort of thing, it's kind of, it's reborn. What do you guys think of that? Can you take an old book and rebirth it?
You certainly can. I think that having some new material in the book is very necessary. You know, sometimes you can just put a new cover on it and give it a new ISBN number, and that will be almost enough to trick bookstores into getting it back in stock. But if you have a you know, at least a new foreword or some new photos, as you say, that can help a lot. One thing I will say is that, you know, generally speaking, after we publish a book, we work on it very proactively, very aggressively for 2 to 3 months. And after that time, the book, of course, is still in print with us, but we are not doing anything to actively promote it. We then rely on the authors to sort of keep it alive, and that is normal for, you know, a mid to large publishing house, size publishing house. So I would say to you, Carol, if your publisher still has your book in print, they are doing right by you. That is really all that they are, you know, obligated to be doing for you at this point. So don't be surprised if they're not promoting it and they're still things that you can do to promote it. If they don't have it in print, meaning it is not, you know, available in their warehouse and it's not available for bookstores to order it, then yes, absolutely, you should try to yank those rights back and see if you can't find another publisher that would do a new edition of it.
Yeah, Lisa, I mean, I think what you're saying is that expectations need to be reasonably realistic for all involved, and that's very hard for authors. I know.
It was hard for me when my book was published.
I was going to say it was hard for me, too.
I know. It is hard.
And it's
The book is still of interest to people, and I have promoted it extensively. And the publisher has sold out all the copies that he had, does not seem to be interested in reprinting it.
Okay.
Well, again, I think that we're in agreement that what you should do is consult with your agent or someone, or just go to the contract itself and find out what the provisions are around the out-of-print status and when and if any rights revert back to you. But, Carol, thank you very much for your question, and thank you for joining us today. Operator Vicki, do we have any other questions?
Yes, we do. Rebecca Stanton Reinstein, you may ask your question.
Rebecca, hi. Good afternoon.
Hi. Mine goes to looking at some of the best ways to promote, in addition to the ones that you talked about before, but when you have a small budget, say that a budget of somewhere around $5,000 to $10,000 top, what kinds of things where you have to pay some money does it make sense to invest?
Tracy or Lisa, do you have any thoughts? Is it better to use that towards a radio campaign, to really making a whiz-bang website, to traveling to these kinds of what we were calling non-traditional book signings? I suppose it's very hard. It's really what you feel up to and what you feel you can manage, right?
Yeah, and it just depends on the book. I mean, the first thing that came to mind for me was a radio satellite tour. Not all books are appropriate for them, but what they are is you contract with an outside company for a certain number of radio interviews, and they guarantee that they will get you that number. So sometimes it's 20, sometimes it's 25, sometimes it's 30. Usually costs around maybe $3,500 or maybe $4,000. In some instances, they can do all 20 interviews in one day, or sometimes they're spread out over the course of, say, a week or two, and you do them all from the comfort of your own home. And some of them are 5 minutes long, some of them are an hour long, some of them are national, some of them are local. But it is a good way to get yourself some airtime. And really, you do get a lot for your investment, and you are guaranteed something in return. So it's not like you're putting the money out there and just crossing your fingers that something will come of it. So that's one possibility.
Now, let me just get that again. It's radio satellite tours. So
that's,
I suppose,
right.
if we Googled for that term or that phrase, you turn up the variety of agencies that do that sort of thing.
That's right. And the company that you mentioned earlier, which is here in Boston, Newman Communications, they do them very well. There's a company in New York called Planned Television Arts. They do them. Even though it says television, they do radio ones too.
Okay, great. Tracy, any thoughts yourself?
Yeah, in my opinion, $5,000 to $10,000 is a substantial amount of money, and a lot can be done for that type of budget. I think the most important thing to do is to put a plan together and understand all of the different ideas that can be used that will target your market, and it's the combination of all of them which will be successful, because someone will say, oh my goodness, I heard that person on radio, I saw a review in this publication, and I heard her speak last week. So, you know, everything that you can do to reach these people, and I think it's going to be more of an investment in your time as opposed to an investment in money. because you can just look. It's a lot of research and a lot of looking at your competition and just understanding all the different ways to target these people and then implementing them. And one example I wanted to give is, for instance, if presidents and CEOs were a target market of yours and you found out that the best way to reach them personally was perhaps through email, perhaps you would think of putting together some type of e-newsletter update on what's going on, where you're going to be speaking, celebrities or other professionals that have quoted on your book. And this e-newsletter would go out to them monthly or bi-monthly or whenever and just keep them updated. And if you find that's the best way to reach them, that might be successful for you.
And that might help to make that money last just a little while. Well, we're coming to the top of the hour, and I know everyone has busy schedules. I've really enjoyed the conversation. I think there have been some things here that are new to me, and I hope new to our audience. I want to thank again Lisa Warren, the author of The Savvy Author's Guide to Book Publicity, and her website is lissawarren.com. Again, we'll be able to email everyone who's participated with a variety of URLs, including... thank Tracy Bisson from Bisson Barcelona in New Hampshire at bissonbarcelona.com, an independent publicist. I want to thank you both for joining us and wish you both the best of luck. And also the same to every author out there, whether you've got your book written or in a drawer, when it's time to go to the media, we hope you'll recall this conversation and you'll use some of that information to make sure you reach your audience. Thank you very much and have a great day.
Thank you.
Beyond the Book is an educational presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center. With conferences and seminars featuring leading authors and editors, publishing analysts, and information technology specialists, Beyond the Book is the premier resource for knowledge on the latest business issues facing today's dynamic publishing industry, from initial research to final publication and beyond.